This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to GEICO. GEICO could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to GEICO.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Immigration overhaul. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Thursday, May 16. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
President Trump today is expected to present a proposal that prioritizes legal immigrants who have a job offer, an education, and who can speak English.
The strictest abortion measure in the country is now law after Alabama's governor signed it. Doctors could get 99 years in prison for performing one.
The push for a $15 an hour minimum wage is dividing House Democrats. We'll explain why.
And beach towns that are affordable for retirees.
Bay St. Louis in Mississippi, which most people haven't heard of. It's only about an hour from New Orleans, which I like because it's a small town, so you might get a little bored, but you can be in New Orleans in an hour. But there is a beautiful beach that, you know, beautiful buttermilk sand beach. It's cute. It's got old architecture. There's lots of spaces that you could renovate if that's your thing.
Katie Hill at Market Watch on where you can retire comfortably in a beach home on $40,000 a year. Her list in about 20 minutes. Alabama's new abortion measure is now law. Governor Kay Ivey signed it yesterday, basically banning the procedure with the possibility of prison time for doctors who perform it. It's an effort, at least in part, to get the U.S. Supreme Court to reconsider the 1973 law that gave a woman the right to terminate a pregnancy. Democratic State Senator Bobby Singleton opposes it.
I think this bill has too many flaws in it, and maybe it's the best thing that it goes up there and it doesn't get affirmed, and Roe v. Wade will still be the law of the land.
The law makes it a felony for doctors to perform an abortion at any point during pregnancy, punishable by up to 99 years in prison, although women who have the procedure would not be criminally liable. There are no exceptions for rape and incest. The bill makes one exception, allowing an abortion when a mother has a, quote, serious health risk. So far this year, four states have enacted bans on abortion once a fetal heartbeat is detected, which can happen at 6 weeks. The near total ban on abortions in Alabama is but the latest example of red state governors and legislators seeking a path to a more conservative Supreme Court. The goal is to produce lawsuits that work their way through lower courts and ultimately to the nation's highest court. But Richard Wolf, Supreme Court correspondent at USA Today, says it may not work out that way. Rich, what's going on?
Well, so what's going on here is that, particularly with the change on the Supreme Court, with Brett Kavanaugh replacing Anthony Kennedy, which made the court at least marginally more conservative, it's unclear how much more conservative, there's a lot of action. There always has been, but there's even more at the state legislative level in predominantly red states, states with Republican governors and legislatures, to pass strict, tough anti-abortion laws, knowing that the courts, you know, when they get challenged, the courts are going to say, no, you can't do this based on Supreme Court precedent. But that could, with appeals of those decisions, of those lower court decisions, eventually get to the Supreme Court.
You know, I thought it was interesting in that you said even though the Supreme Court has had the addition lately of conservatives like Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh, the court isn't likely to reverse Roe versus Wade?
The court isn't likely. This is not my opinion. This is the opinion of most experts on both sides. The court isn't likely to go whole hog reversing Roe v. Wade quickly. It's only got a 5-4 conservative majority, and it's unclear where John Roberts, the Chief Justice, and Brett Kavanaugh, the newest justice, in particular those two, stand on reversing a precedent that goes back almost 50 years. They have reversed, it's notable, they have reversed precedents, this new conservative court, including just the other day they reversed a precedent that goes back to the 1970s. I won't go into the details of that. So they're not averse to reversing precedent when needed, but they know that the right to abortion has become so long upheld in the United States since Roe v. Wade that they're loath to do it quickly. What they're more likely to do is take on cases that restrict abortion in minor or semi-major ways, rather than laws that say you can't have one after 6 weeks or you can't have one altogether. They're more likely to take baby steps in this regard. And so there are various laws that are pending before the Supreme Court for their consideration. They haven't decided whether to take up any of them yet, but they likely will take up one or more of these. And those laws coming from Indiana, coming from Louisiana and elsewhere, would do lesser things. Those could go to the court and could get decided, and could get decided 5-4 by conservatives for more restrictions. But it's very unlikely this soon after Kennedy's retirement and Kavanaugh's confirmation that they would go much further than that.
We're speaking with Rich Wolf, Supreme Court correspondent at USA Today. He's written a piece about Alabama's strict abortion law and how it's aimed at the Supreme Court. Then the court may prove to be an obstacle. Finish up with what happened in North Dakota in 2015. Is that telling?
Well, it's telling in a sense. That was back when the Supreme Court had Anthony Kennedy, and Anthony Kennedy had been a vote in the past for abortion rights with restrictions, but not a vote for outlawing abortion. And so when that law, it was a fetal heartbeat law, it was a 6-week law, got to the Supreme Court said, we're not going to hear it. It had been struck down by lower courts. And the Supreme Court basically said, we're going to let that stand. The lower court ruling stand that law obviously goes against our precedent, which it obviously did. It's the Supreme Court that has to make these new laws, fetal heartbeat laws or outlawing abortion in Alabama or anything else. The Supreme Court has to make them legal by reversing its own precedents. So what state legislatures and governors and lower courts do is almost preordained. Republican legislatures are going to pass stuff. Lower courts, regardless of the ideological feelings of those judges, are likely to strike them down because they work for the Supreme Court, in essence. They can't go against Supreme Court precedent. So in that case, with Kennedy on the court, the other conservatives presumably decided not in our interest to grant that case from North Carolina and from North Dakota and hear it, because it's unlikely to be reversed.
Thanks, Rich. Richard Wolf, Supreme Court correspondent at USA Today. Warning of threats from Iran and Shiite militias supported by its government. The U.S. has ordered a partial withdrawal of its diplomats from Iraq. This week, a U.S. official said Iran likely was behind recent attacks on oil tankers in waters off the United Arab Emirates. Last week, the administration deployed an aircraft carrier, a bomber task force, and other equipment and personnel, citing unspecified threats from Iran. But U.S. authorities haven't disclosed details behind their assessments, something that's frustrating South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham.
I have no idea what the threat stream is beyond what I read in the paper. And I think there are a lot of people in my shoes that are going to support standing up to Iran, but we need to understand what we're doing.
Iranian officials reacted by saying it's the latest in a propaganda war by Washington, suggesting the U.S. is trying to initiate a conflict. A spokesman for Iran's mission to the United Nations said Iran is no threat to anybody in Iraq or elsewhere, and Iran is not preparing for any attacks anywhere. It's 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
In general, I'm a win-win guy. When I have to spend hours searching for the right part, it's lose-lose. It's time lost for me and lost time for my crew. That's why I order from Grainger. With product experts that have the answers to my toughest questions, an easy-to-use website to help me find the right product quickly, I can rely on Grainger to make getting supplies for my business as simple and seamless as possible. When it comes to getting things done, it's a win-win when Grainger's got your back. Call clickgrainger.com or stop by to see for yourself. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
This human resources professional is crushing it, thanks to Kronos. And this is his hype song.
You can fall back with the pack. I'm a leader pack.
I've got HR, payroll, talent, and time.
I'm on the top, I'm gonna rise up. Now we are
engaging all the best people.
Blast off to the front of the field. This is
Kronos. HR solutions for the modern workforce. Learn more at kronos.com/HR swagger.
Glad you're with us. President Trump today is expected to present a plan that would overhaul the legal immigration system to favor applicants who speak English, are well-educated, and have job offers. The plan would keep legal immigration steady at 1.1 million people a year, but family-based immigration would account for only a third of that instead of about two-thirds like it is today. Instead, high-skilled people with jobs would be given priority and could bring their spouses and children with them. Mr. Trump spoke at the National Peace Officers Memorial Service.
I don't think most countries are giving us their finest. Do you agree? And that's what's happening. And it's causing tremendous problems with crime.
Additionally, the plan would build more of the southern border wall and improve inspections of goods and people at ports of entry to fight drug smuggling. It would also propose an increase in fees at the border to pay for security infrastructure. Reuters says the plan does not address what to do about the surge of people crossing the southern border from Mexico. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, Alabama's Republican governor has signed the most stringent abortion legislation in the nation, making performing an abortion a felony in nearly all cases. In a statement, Governor Kay Ivey said the legislation stands as a powerful testament to Alabamians' deeply held belief that every life is precious and that every life is a sacred gift from God. But Democratic State Senator Bobby Singleton doesn't think it will get beyond district court.
I think that the court would basically kind of throw all of that out, and I think that it would not get past that. But if it does get there, I'm certain that the U.S. Supreme Court would throw it out for those reasons.
The bill sponsors want to give conservatives on the Supreme Court a chance to gut abortion rights. The acting head of the FAA, Daniel Elwell, says Boeing should have done more to explain an automated flight control system on its 737 MAX aircraft before two deadly crashes. But he defended his agency's safety certification of the plane and its decision not to ground the jet until other regulators around the world had already done so.
There are so many pieces to any accident. I've never looked at an accident where there weren't three or four or five links of the chain, any one of which, if it hadn't gone wrong, the plane would have survived. So we know that there's going to be, and there are, factors.
Elwell says he expects Boeing to submit a fix to the plane's flight control software in the next week or so. President Trump has granted a full pardon to Conrad Black, a former newspaper publisher who wrote a flattering political biography of Trump. Black's media empire once included the Chicago Sun-Times and the Daily Telegraph of London. He was convicted of fraud in 2007 and spent 3.5 years in prison. White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders says Black has made tremendous contributions to business and to political and historical thought. Looking for a job that gives you a six-figure income, high job satisfaction, and has enough job openings to make it a real possibility? Become a data scientist. Glassdoor says data scientists have the number one job because companies are always keen to use Intel to improve efficiency, and they're in high demand. They also make about $108,000 a year. Other top jobs, nursing managers, marketing managers, occupational therapists, and product managers.
I've seen these come up on lists before, but I've not seen nursing managers.
Right. You wouldn't think that sounds stressful to me. I don't know.
Agreed. You know, nursing, yes, right? So many people turning 65 and we're staying alive longer.
That's a stressful job. I'm not sure.
It's definitely
top five.
Definite stress. Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour. Looking to retire on a beach but are afraid of destroying your savings? Change where you're looking, perhaps. Katie Hill, editor at MarketWatch, has done some research on where you can find affordable beach homes. Katie, I didn't think affordable beach homes could actually be a thing.
Yeah, Bay St. Louis in Mississippi, which most people haven't heard of. It's only about an hour from New Orleans, which I like because it's a small town, so you might get a little bored, but you can be in New Orleans in an hour. But there is a beautiful beach, that, you know, beautiful buttermilk sand beach. It's cute. It's got old architecture. There's lots of spaces that you could renovate if that's your thing. I love this. Coastal Living wrote about it a couple years ago, and they just said it has a mix of southern grace, mystery, and heat. And I thought that sums it up pretty well.
And Pensacola, Florida made the list. You quoted a therapist there who said business is terrible because everyone is so happy and healthy.
Right. She said Pensacola is the most disappointing market in the country for mental health professionals. But she has a point, right? The weather is quite nice. The city is a good size to me, you know, 50,000 people. There's a theater. There's an art museum. There's a lot of special events. They have a really cool seafood festival. So it's a little bigger than Bay St. Louis. I like that. But you still get these beautiful beaches, and it's not a big city. So if you want kind of like a smaller spot, good weather, and again, it's pretty cheap, and it's Florida, so you've got the no-income tax on top of that. So that's a really good option to think about.
We're speaking with Katie Hill, editor at MarketWatch, about affordable beach towns in which to retire. Now, also in Florida, there is Fort Pierce. Where is that exactly?
Pierce is about an hour north of Palm Beach. You could fly into the Palm Beach Airport pretty easily, which is a good thing to know. It has a gorgeous main street. So that was one of the things that first drew me to it. Historic architecture with palm trees rustling around, a few restaurants and attractions. I mean, this isn't a bustling town, but does have a theater with Broadway shows, you know, and comedy acts. There's a few museums. There's a great farmer's market on Saturday morning. So I really liked that about it. It also is a great fishing spot. So if you want to chill out, do a bunch of fishing in retirement, this is the spot to go.
And Corpus Christi, Texas also made the list.
Right. I like this for somebody who's like, you know, I want to be on the beach, but I need a city. You know, I want to go shopping. I want a lot of different restaurants, options. Yeah, Corpus Christi really is quite affordable. I was surprised by that, too, just because it often makes these lists and you would think it would be expensive, but it's really not. Average homes there are about $150,000. Texas doesn't have income tax, so you're getting a benefit there. And then, you know, you can go on a lot of beach outings, the Padre Island National Seashore, which is actually the longest stretch of undeveloped barrier island in the world. That's right over there, and there's just tons of shopping. There's a huge aquarium for the grandkids. So, yeah, if you want a city and beach, this is a good option for you.
Thanks, Katie. Katie Hill, editor at MarketWatch. Again, that list, Bay St. Louis, Mississippi, Pensacola, Florida, Fort Pierce, Florida, and Corpus Christi, Texas. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. I love the incredible feeling of five-star hotel sheets, but it's so difficult and expensive to get sheets like that at home. That's why I've been recommending Brooklinen.com. Brooklinen is the fastest-growing bedding brand in the world with over 35,000 five-star reviews. They were the first DTC bedding company, meaning they work directly with manufacturers and directly with customers. No middlemen. That saves us money. With Brooklinen, I can expect luxury sheets without the luxury markup. My Brooklinen sheets are the best, most comfortable sheets I've ever slept on. I couldn't recommend them more if you're looking to treat yourself or a loved one to a bedding upgrade. For a limited time right now, Brooklinen.com has an offer while celebrating its fifth birthday. Get 20% off site-wide when you shop at Brooklinen.com, but only until May 7th. Shop their biggest event to date. Brooklinen is so confident in their products that all sheets, comforters, and towels come with a lifetime warranty. The only way to get 20% off site-wide is to go to brooklinen.com. Only until Tuesday, May 7th. That's BROOKLINEN.com. Brooklinen.com. These are the best sheets ever.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Thursday, May 16. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. President Trump to outline an immigration overhaul today. Alabama's strict abortion measure is now law. Final episode of The Big Bang Theory tonight on CBS, ending a 12-year run. PGA Championship tees off today in Long Island, New York. Northern lights could be visible this evening in much of the northern U.S., from New England to Montana and as far south as Illinois. And the man who got some surprising news hours after proposing to his girlfriend. That story in about 20 minutes. We're coming to you today from the Dell Studios. Dell is thanking small businesses this month with up to 45% off select computers with Intel Core processors. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with a small business technology advisor today. A debate about whether the country should have a patchwork of minimum wages is complicating a push to raise the federal pay floor. It's also becoming an issue that's dividing House Democrats. A bill to gradually raise the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour by the year 2024 is just shy of the votes needed to pass the Democratic-led House of Representatives, where it faces resistance from some lawmakers from regions where wages and the cost of living are generally lower. It's a story by Wall Street Journal reporter Christina Peterson, who covers Capitol Hill. Christina, what's up here?
There's a big push among Democrats to show that they are behind raising the minimum wage and in support of workers and unions that are hoping to see a higher minimum wage. But where exactly that minimum wage should be set at a federal level has been kind of a tricky issue for them. There's a pretty big group of support. More than 200 Democrats, including House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, support a bill from House Education and Labor Committee Chairman Bobby Scott that would raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. So they're getting close to the number that they would need to get that through the House, which is around 218. But they just don't seem to be able to quite get there. And the biggest hang-up is from a group of lawmakers who are worried that that would hurt places where the cost of living is a little bit lower, where wages are lower, and they are advocating for taking those regional differences into account. So at this point, they just seem to be negotiating and seeing if they can reach some kind of consensus, but they've been stuck there for a little while.
All right, so that $15 an hour in some places, I guess maybe parts of Middle America or Gulf
South
states, yeah, so they feel that, or some lawmakers feel that that would hurt small businesses, say, what, stop expansion plans or could lead to layoffs?
Exactly. Yeah. They worry that people could end up losing their jobs if employers were forced to raise the minimum wage too quickly. Now, even Democrats who want to take that regional approach into account have backed a plan from Congresswoman Terry Sewell that would eventually get to $15 an hour everywhere. It just would be over a longer period of time, and urban centers and places where the minimum wage is already higher would raise that more quickly. So most of it is really a question of timing, how quickly you would accelerate raising the minimum wage.
Okay. So what kind of support does that have then, kind of the gradual increase to 15?
You know, there's not a huge group of supporters, but there's enough to make it sort of come to a standstill in the House. This is a bill that they would love to be voting on and triumphantly passing, and they just haven't managed to get there yet. There is a lot of support for a $15 minimum wage on the presidential campaign trail. Most of the candidates favor that or some very similar variation. So there's sort of this widespread support, but some of the people who favor this regional approach are also the lawmakers who represent the more vulnerable districts. In many cases, these are the freshmen who helped Democrats take back the House majority. So leadership needs to be somewhat sensitive to their political needs.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal congressional reporter Christina Peterson. Her story is called Push for a $15 Minimum Wage Divides Democrats. Even if it passes, as it's struggling to, it's not going to pass the Senate, right? So this is just for show,
right?
Basically?
Right. I mean, this is sort of part of the House Democrat strategy to draw a contrast between what they are for and what the GOP-controlled Senate and White House is for ahead of the elections. They want to make that contrast very clear for voters. But you're absolutely right that the GOP-controlled Senate is unlikely to take this bill up at any point with Majority Leader McConnell in control. So this would be largely a symbolic vote for sure.
All right, so how much of a priority is this among House Democrats? And I guess as part of that, what are the odds it's something like this will get done?
Yeah, I mean, different aides have different levels of optimism of when this will or won't reach the House floor. There are negotiations going on. Chairman Scott's staff met with the Blue Dog Coalition, which is a group of more centrist House Democrats, over the last congressional break in April. And I know that Chairman Scott has been talking to individual members who have concerns. So they are working the bill and trying to get there, but it's just sort of uncertain right now whether they will. Chairman Scott's sort of counter to the regional concerns is that he thinks that if you leave a regional approach in place, then that locks people into a lower wage who already have that. So income disparity is locked in.
Thanks, Christina. Christina Peterson, Wall Street Journal reporter who covers Capitol Hill. Reminder, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. You can follow me directly on Twitter as well at Gordon Deal. If you can handle the cynicism, sarcasm, and good-natured teasing. 19 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Friday Eve. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, if you're looking for a way to motivate people in 2019, you'll be relieved to know that free beer still does the trick. That's how a brewery in North Carolina managed to get a van back that was stolen from them in less than an hour. Fox News says the Unknown Brewing Company, based in Charlotte, tweeted that they were looking for help to recover a company van that was stolen on Monday morning. They wrote that whoever finds it would get a keg party. They even offered the keg party to the people who stole it if they brought the van back and if they also smiled for the camera. The post was immediately shared hundreds of times, leading to the vehicle being found in just 42 minutes. More than 15 people called in that time with tips about the van, and soon an Instagram user posted a picture of the vehicle leading to its recovery. Police say the criminals may have used the van to commit over 10 car break-ins in the area before abandoning it. They were busy. In a follow-up post, the company thanked the Super Sleuths of Charlotte and announced that they would be brewing a new variety of beer called Van Theft Auto and selling it for just 25 cents in celebration.
Nice.
Yeah, very nice.
The company is called the Unknown Brewing Company?
Yes.
That sounds like an Abbott and Costello routine, like who's on first. It's right. The Unknown Brewing Company. Well, what's the name of it? Yes. I don't know. It's unknown.
Now we do a lot of stories about kind of dumb criminal type stuff here. I mean, this really seemed like a kind of a poor choice of vans to steal. You know, it has sort of big green lettering on the side, and it's this big logo on the side and everything. It's very identifiable. Not really the one you want to go driving around in committing crimes.
Well, as you point out, they were pretty efficient. 10 car break-ins?
Yeah.
And this thing was returned in like 22 minutes or 42 minutes after it was posted.
Yes. Things move quickly in Charlotte.
Wow.
And if the final season of Game of Thrones has left you less than satisfied, you're apparently not alone. The unrest has gotten so bad, in fact, that a fan started a petition on change.org asking HBO to redo Season 8. The petition, titled Remake Game of Thrones Season 8 with Competent Writers, is fast approaching its goal of 300,000 signatures as of this morning. Of course, there's always a flip side. In response, another fan has started a different change.org petition urging fans to stop signing petitions, forcing TV shows and movies to meet your demands. It's perhaps telling that the anti-petition petition has considerably less support, just over 800 signatures at last check, proving that there's never a shortage of people willing to complain about TV shows. The final episode of Game of Thrones, assuming that HBO doesn't wind up remaking the whole season, will air this Sunday.
No.
Now, of course, you and I are not watchers of Game of Thrones.
Correct.
But here's one thing that does concern me.
Okay.
The guys who are in charge of Game of Thrones, who write it, are set to be in charge of the next Star Wars trilogy, as I understand. Now, that is near and dear to my heart.
Oh, boy.
So I'm a little bit concerned about the blowback that's happening this season.
Wow. It's not too late to go on change.org right now and start a petition yourself.
Yes.
No Game of Thrones writers for Star Wars stuff.
We need to get the ball rolling on this.
Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
At Dell, we know running a small business takes hard work. As a thank you, for all of Small Business Month, we're offering up to 45% off select computers with Intel Core processors. Plus, get additional savings when you call a Dell Small Business Technology Advisor. Call 877-BUY-DELL today. That's 877-BUY-DELL. Additional savings valid May 6th through 30th at 8 a.m. Eastern on select computers from customer calls Dell. Excludes Dell Canvas, PowerEdge T30, and select order codes.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Evan Lyles, CEO of Roush Enterprises, instead.
For the people that are involved in product development, there couldn't be more unique and exciting opportunities that are really going to shape the future of the world. It's a really exciting time to be in Michigan.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
Thanks for joining us. Eating a low-fat, plant-based diet could help significantly lower a woman's risk of dying from breast cancer. And the key appears to be changing eating habits before tumors have a chance to develop. The new findings are from a long-term analysis of the federally funded Women's Health Initiative and included data on more than 48,000 postmenopausal women across the U.S. When the study began in 1993, the women were in their 50s, 60s, and 70s and had never been diagnosed with breast cancer. A write-up by NBC News says nearly 20,000 of those women spent the next 8 years carefully logging what they ate, aiming for less dietary fat, such as red meat and full-fat dairy products, and more fruit, vegetables, and whole grains. The women were tracked for 20 years,
Researchers who analyzed the data found that women who stuck to the low-fat, plant-based diet had a 20% lower risk of dying from breast cancer, the second deadliest cancer among women. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, after years of setbacks and stalemates, President Trump will lay out yet another immigration plan as he tries to convince the public and lawmakers that the nation's legal immigration system should be overhauled. The latest effort, spearheaded by Trump's son-in-law and advisor Jared Kushner, focuses on rethinking the green card system so to favor people with high-level skills, degrees, and job offers.
Tremendous problems are caused at the southern border, from drugs to the wrong people being allowed to come in because of a corrupt and broken system that can be changed in 20 minutes.
A shift to a merit-based system would mark a dramatic departure from the nation's largely family-based approach. Democratic Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois was asked if Democrats are open to working on reform.
Well, there have been so many aborted efforts when it comes to immigration reform under this president. I'm skeptical.
Meanwhile, a Guatemalan official says a 2.5-year-old migrant child has died after crossing the border, becoming the fourth minor known to have died after being detained by Border Patrol since December. The boy had entered the U.S. with his parent in El Paso in early April. The boy had a high fever and difficulty breathing, and authorities took him to a children's hospital where he was diagnosed with pneumonia. He died on Tuesday. Responding to widespread consumer complaints, the FCC says it will take steps to give phone companies permission to block unwanted robocalls. We get billions of unwanted phone calls annually, making it the number one complaint received by the FCC. But carriers have long been wary of blocking robocalls for fear of breaking the regulators' call completion rules that require phone companies to make sure calls reach their intended recipient. The commission has scheduled a June 6 vote on a measure that would assure phone companies that blocking unwanted calls won't run afoul of federal rules. The Milwaukee Bucks are off and running in the Eastern Conference Finals, knocking off the Raptors 108-100 in Game 1 last night. Brooke Lopez poured in 29 to lead the Bucks, including crucial baskets in the fourth quarter. Marv Albert on TNT.
2-on-1 gives to Lopez, who had to make a tough catch and put it down.
Tonight is Game 2 of the Western Conference Finals, with the Warriors leading the Trailblazers 1-0 in that series.
Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. A recently engaged couple discovered they are the perfect match in more ways than one when a call came just hours after Aldo Cataldi popped the question, informing him that he was qualified to donate his kidney to his new fiancée, Geraldine Chingosho. Southwest News Service in the UK says Miss Chingosho, who is thriving with her new kidney and planning their wedding, had been diagnosed with chronic kidney disease shortly after her first date with Mr. Cataldi. None of her relatives were found to be compatible donors, and soon she needed daily dialysis. Miss Chingosho, who's 22, said Mr. Cataldi volunteered to be tested immediately to see if he was a match, but she had doubts due to their different ethnicities. The pair went to Portugal to celebrate her birthday, where Mr. Cataldi proposed. Just hours later, they got the call with news that he was a donor match. The pair underwent surgery February 21st and are now looking forward to their wedding in August. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news! There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.